It hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in the clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the show. This is Martin Willis, your host. And these are exciting times to have a UFO show. I'm really glad I have a microphone. And I'm not the guy on the pulpit, but other people may be, and they're invited on the show. But I'm the guy who will be interviewing some people that have a really good weigh-ins on what's been going on ever since that story was released in the New York Times. It's been a different world, I think. So Alejandro Rojas, who typically joins us, I just found out he's taking an extended Christmas vacation. And speaking of Christmas, I hope all of you that celebrate Christmas had a wonderful one. And it'll be New Year's Eve before the next show, so I hope you have a very safe and wonderful New Year's Eve coming up. So the show tonight, we have Stanton Friedman and Kathy Martin, and they're going to, in the first hour or so, we're going to be weighing in on the Pentagon's UFO search. And then after that, we're going to be talking exclusively about the Betty and Barney Hill case. That's something I've never really done with these two together. So that'll be exciting. And we are taking calls. If you have a pen and paper and you're listening live, you want to call later on in the show after the first half hour, dial 603-967-4030. And would love to get some questions in the first hour of the show regarding this the Pentagon UFO search. That would be a great thing. So welcome to the show, both Kathy and Stan. I'm so glad to have you on.
Thanks. Glad to be here. It's great to be back.
Yes, that's right. I was thinking about you, just wondering what your thoughts were when all of this was kind of going down, Stan. So what do you think about this whole thing?
Well, I was frankly enormously surprised. I was delighted. I thought it was handled very well. I was surprised, as a matter of fact. I had heard Tom DeLong. I'd read his book. And I knew he seemed to be short on evidence, a lot of story. But I think he handled this release extremely well. And the other guys with him, Elizondo and so forth, I was very impressed. It's the most impressive single UFO event I've seen in a very long time. I was very pleased about it. I had calls about it. I mean, there were a lot of things that we didn't talk about, that they didn't talk about, but still. It looked like a whole new ball game, to tell you the truth. You know, like when government guys with fancy titles come on board and say we had the secret program going for, 5 years? That's pretty big news because it's been a long time. And you can't help but respond to them. They're not guys making up stories. I was so impressed to see Harry Reid. He was a senator for 30 years, for goodness sakes.
Right.
The majority leader, when he comes on so straight and square, and, this was a good show. And, I was, how shall I put this? I'm a very forward kind of guy. I'm not accountable to anybody but me. And so I was disappointed, in a sense, that none of the other people were quite willing to go out on the limb of saying alien. They almost got there, but they stopped short. I think they're still thinking that people won't accept that. And I reject that viewpoint. I've been out there. You know, nobody's talked in more places and more hours than I have, I don't think. And I just don't worry. I don't get a hard time for saying some UFOs are alien spacecraft. Remember, you got to ask the right questions. Nobody's saying all UFOs are alien spacecraft. I hope nobody's saying that. But so I was a little put off by the pussyfooting around, so to speak. You notice how they avoided the word alien and ET and so forth. But that's okay. They'll get, when they, as their feet get wetter, they'll realize it's okay. So I think it's a whole new ballgame in ufology. I just wish I was 20 years younger.
Yeah. Well, you know, I agree. I heard George Knapp say, you know, it's changed everything. And, you know, I think it has, you know, and as far as what you're saying there about the alien aspect of it or the possibility of it, I noticed that a lot of times when, you know, it doesn't matter who is being interviewed, the interviewer is trying to corner people into saying that. Have you noticed that?
Yes, I did. And I was, as I say, nobody took the bait, so to speak. But that's okay. Look, it took me a long while when I first got started to realize that it's okay to stand up and be counted, to put your facts on the table, to draw a conclusion. And I know there are a lot of people that still don't want to do that. They're afraid for some reason. What do you got to lose? I don't have anything to lose because I'm only accountable to me.
Yeah.
Well, I'll take Kathy, too, sometimes.
So, Kathy, let's hear your
name's on the book, too.
Oh, pardon me. Pardon me.
That's right.
Yeah. Kathy, let's hear what your thoughts are on I know you've been following this real closely as well.
Yes. In the beginning, I was cautiously pleased. I wanted to know more about it and to know for certain that this was not some kind of misinformation or disinformation. And the more I learned, the more elated I became because this was a study that had 36 thick reports with hundreds of pages in each report. And 36 technical reports to go along with them. So there is a lot of information there. And, of course, a lot of it's still classified. We'll see how much can be declassified. And as I was listening, I noted that Luis Elizondo would say, this is what I can tell you, and of course, I can't go further than that because it's still classified. So that was important for me to hear. I know that there is a lot more. The fact that this was tracked by the most sophisticated radar system in the world, I think, is really very important. It takes millions of dollars just to train the military people who use the weapon sensor. It's, what is it called? Advanced targeting forward looking infrared pod. Is
very
what it's
well
called.
Done.
but it is the most powerful tracking lasers in the world. And that's really important because Harry Reid did make the statement, quote, "I'm very glad because now we have scientific evidence." So he was actually willing to say that. He was willing to take that step. And that's really important, too. And I would encourage all of these men who are working on this project to take a look at our history of the investigation of flying discs. Dating back to 1947, we have a tremendous amount of evidence that these things have been investigated in 1947 by the Air Material Command. And way back then, they said that they could outfly anything that we had, that they were real and not visionary or fictitious, shaped like a disc, largest man-made craft. They had extreme rates of climb and maneuverability. They were metallic or light reflecting. They were circular or elliptical, flat on the bottom, domed on the top. So they did quite an extensive study way back in 1947. And the big question they were asking then is, could this be Russia's aircraft? They did investigate that, and then they found out that it didn't belong to the Soviet Union. So what could they say by deduction is that it was nothing that they knew of that was manufactured on our planet and was far superior to what we have. And that's the same thing that they're saying today in this new study. So I would hope that they would go back and take a look at this, because there's a lot of evidence that they really should look at, including Project Blue Book Special Report number 14. And Stan, you might want to
one of the things that was interesting about the program is that the things that weren't included, there was no reference to General Wolander's statement, Air Force General, 1968, reports of UFOs which could affect national security are not part of the Blue Book system. That was an incredible statement. And if we close Project Blue Book, this is in 1968, we didn't know about it until 10 years later, but he said, if we close Project Blue Book, the public won't have a place to report sightings. However, as previously noted, reports which could affect national security will continue to be investigated using the procedures designed for that purpose. That was way back then. And so it was kind of funny that none of that was mentioned. Special Report 14 wasn't mentioned. There are a number of things that we have to recognize here, though. Look at the titles of those, five guys who were speaking out, Elizondo and so forth. Very impressive to me, anyway. We're talking about the first team here, not guys who came along for the ride, and they had guts. And I was delighted to see that. We haven't had that kind of people put up in front of the public, really, before. Do you think? I don't think. I can't remember a time when such impressive people were put in front of us. And so, and of course, you expected some of the nonsense from Dr. Tyson, for example. And these guys, the SETI community, can't seem to understand that there might be reasons for aliens to want to come to planet Earth. They talk about all aliens would be to walk around, have fun, meet people, blah, blah, blah. Hey, this is a planet on which 50 million people were killed in a war. One more. 50 million people.
Yeah.
It's a planet on which 2,000 nuclear warheads have been exploded. That means that we know about nuclear fusion. Fusion can be used to go to the stars. So everybody in the neighborhood knows there's a bunch of idiots over there on Earth. And look, they should be able to get here. That's not a happy thought. So there's a real world here, part of a local galactic neighborhood, I like to call it. I'm pleased that this took on a whole new tone. Don't you think it did, Kathy? It sounded different to me.
It absolutely did. In the past, we've had a little bit said by politicians, for example, or maybe scientists, but not a great deal. But now the Academy, the Stars Academy of Arts and Science, has some pretty high-powered people. Now, Chris Mellon, who's part of the Mellon family, former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Security and Information Operations and Intelligence Policy, Hal Puthoff. I don't know if you've heard of his name before,
oh, yeah.
Martin. But that is a big name, the CIA's Extrasensory Perception Project, remote viewing at Stanford Institute with other big names like Ingo Swann and Russell Targ. I'm really glad that he's there because that's going to be very important. Yeah. Stephen Justice from Lockheed Martin Skunk Works, Jim Semivan, CIA Director of Operations. You have some high-powered people, and Luis Elizondo, who, of course, was the Pentagon official who ran the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program.
And they stated $22 million.
Yes.
I know, which is...
usually put numbers on these things.
You know, I heard someone say that's like a few lunches at the Pentagon.
Let me give you a number to compare it to. When I was working on nuclear airplanes in 1958, our budget that year at General Electric was $100 million.
And
we
what
employed
year?
3,400 people, 1958.
Oh, my God. That's like
and we employed 3,400 people, of whom 1,100 were engineers and scientists. So there have been huge programs, but for UFO research over a five-year period, and this is the first time we really had definitive statement about security levels. Did you notice that they made a real point of saying that this was top secret and so forth? And in the past, I've heard, quote, experts, unquote, say that there's nothing classified about flying saucers. We've been told everything that's going on, and that's obviously baloney. And I was glad to see it come out that way. I mean, that hey, here's the real story, and there's more to it, and we haven't gotten that out yet.
Oh, yeah.
When are we going to see all those reports?
Not only that, there's supposed to be 12 more videos, or 12 altogether. Ooh. Which will be really exciting. And I want to talk a little bit about the videos in just a minute. But one thing I want to bring up is, you know, I'm sure that you were paying attention, both you, Kathy and Stan, when this thing came out in October. It's just, I find it kind of interesting. Alejandro and I were talking, wow, this is a guy from the government. And, you know, we were talking on our show, both of our shows, about how substantial this was. But it didn't really get the push until that wonderful article came out in the New York Times. And
That's
I'm just
right.
wondering, mm-hmm. I mean, it really makes you wonder why no other media picked it up until, you know, Leslie Kahn got involved along with Ralph Blumenthal. And why do you think it just did not take off? And if it wasn't for that article, everything would be the same.
Well, the article gives you a frame of reference. If it's in the New York Times, it's got to be true, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
substantial,
We've never had that kind of a stamp of approval on something coming out.
Yeah.
And so I still want to know what caused this to come out now. Somebody had to say something somewhere. Now is the time. And I don't know whether it was Elizondo, although he seemed to be one of the major actors here, and finally glad to get it out. It's about time. But it took courage for somebody to take that big step, and I'm so glad that it's happened.
Right.
And I hope there's more to come, of course.
Yeah, you know.
I am, too.
Yeah, this is something I brought up while talking to Alejandro the other day, and it's kind of like, we're at a point where there has to be a strike while the iron's hot, or something has to keep this thing alive enough to get enough people to pay attention to it. You know,
I'm hoping that people will take a cue from this and more of them will be coming forth, but probably after the first of the year. You know, this is a very busy time of year for news and things going on. So I think things will have to calm down a little, and then they'll need stories.
Yeah.
And Sarah will get back on this one, I think.
And I have to say that on one of the news stations, I'm not sure if it was CNN or Fox, but it was one of the ones that I was watching, the news commentator said, until recently, this could not be discussed on public news. So maybe there has been a policy change. And I'm hoping that that is what has happened, and that the news can now cover this sort of thing.
Wow.
I hope so. It's time. Well, it's past time, way past time. But again, I'm still looking for somebody somewhere had to make a decision. Was it Elizondo, or is there somebody else lurking there?
Yeah, yeah. I've talked about this with other people as well. And it's like, you know, I don't want to say that anything was scripted, but there was probably some type of guidelines on what someone like him could actually reveal.
Well, normally you have security guides for any classified program. You have a detailed tabulation of what is classified and what isn't. And so somebody had to say, you know, spell those things out. But whoever did, this is a breakthrough, and let's hope it continues. Now, of course, we'll get people like Tyson saying silly things, but I was very pleased to see Billy Cox and George Knapp, two of the best UFO journalists around, come out very strongly in written form and in details, and they have a following, and I'm so pleased that they're on board.
Right.
You know, it's going to happen next month.
Well, I saw Tyson talk about this on CNN, and I was not. I was actually impressed that he didn't go the way he normally goes into this whole debunking mode and like it's crazy. And I thought he was fairly level-headed. You know, he said a couple of semi-condescending things, but for the most part, he said, well, you know, maybe it should be investigated. I was actually kind of shocked when he said that.
Coming from him, that was very shocking. I mean, remember, he has a history on this subject way back when. He said the proof that the government can't keep secrets is how much we know about President Clinton's genitalia.
Yeah, right.
Which is an utterly stupid remark, frankly. He doesn't understand security. He doesn't understand interstellar travel. People think that somehow astronomers know something about interstellar travel. They don't. They know that there are stars out there and planets and things like that. They don't know how to get there. We didn't get into space because the astronomers were designing and building space systems in spite of them. And way back in 1956, the British Astronomer Royal said, space travel is utter bilge. What could it do? Who's going to pay for it? We should spend money on good equipment for astronomy. That was a year before Sputnik. And the field that has benefited the most from the space program has been astronomy. But, you know, also, astronomers don't seem to have any concept of exploration, of why would people go someplace. You know, Columbus wasn't looking to meet with his cousins, for goodness sakes. And the history of discovery is people having guts enough to ask new questions, to stick their necks out, to look for answers. And the astronomical community has been opposed all along. It's amazing to look at their books. And their absence, Dr. Seth Shostak, he chimed in the other day, too. You know, it's kind of like he said on one program very recently, because I won the debate when he and I debated, well, that doesn't prove I was right. You know, that doesn't deal with the evidence at all.
You know, speaking of on the skeptic side, someone sent me a clip about an hour ago with James Oberg. And, you know, he's, you know, you oftentimes you can see his, you know, debunkings. And something you have mentioned before, Stan, I've heard you say this, when you can't attack the evidence, you attack the person. That's what debunkers tend to do. And sure enough, he went right for Leslie Kane, saying, you know, because the Chile, you know, UFO was not good. That this is very similar to it, and that is absolute bull, because that was 50 miles, you know, away from the camera in that particular case, and it was a new camera they were using, and all that. There was a lot of things involved, and for him to say that, is just kind of ridiculous.
Well, it's one of the basic rules. Don't bother me with the facts. My mind's made up. What the public doesn't know, I'm not going to tell them. If it can't attack the data, attack the people. It's easier. And do your research by proclamation. We heard a lot of that over the past 2 weeks. Investigation is too much trouble. And that's one of the problems that the SETI community, you know, silly effort to investigate. Somebody came up with another one the other day, which I thought was good, but I can't remember what it was. But they insist, ignore all the evidence that relates to there being extraterrestrials here on planet Earth. Talk about life out there, but they ain't coming here, folks. You know, which is so silly. We have all kinds of evidence, but you noticed the other night that nobody mentioned the physical trace cases.
Yeah.
Nobody mentioned a lot of radar visual sightings. There are all kinds of look, did you notice that there was no mention that the NSA released 156 top secret Umbra UFO documents on which you can read one sentence per page? That's the NSA. I think these guys think it means no such agency. I don't know. They also, there was no mention of Blue Book Special Report 14, only data on 3,201 sightings. And you notice when they showed the Navy pilot footage, after a while, they only showed the object standing still. And to me, what was so impressive about that is how suddenly, zip, thing goes off at a very high rate of speed after. Now, we don't have things that can move very rapidly and hover.
Right.
But they didn't show that part anymore. It was kind of like, hey, you missed the point, guys.
Well, also, along those lines, Stan, I heard George, now George Knapp has done a wonderful job with this, and I highly respect him. But on one interview, someone said, well, couldn't this be technology, you know, from you know, another country? And he said, sure, it could be China or Russia or something. You know, that's very, that is a possibility, but that is disregarding all the past, you know, all the way back, like you mentioned, to 1947, all the craft that could do spectacular things. So that there's no way that we could have had the technology anywhere in any country would be hidden that long.
No, because if you have the technology, you want to use it to threaten your neighbors.
That's right.
Isn't that the name of the game?
Yeah. Kathy.
Yes.
When you were, did you watch actually when Tom DeLonge had his little thing back in October? Did you see that as well?
Yes.
You did. And in general, what did you think of all the people that were, you were mentioning the different names. I think Chris Mellon, who was actually on this show at one time, I think he's one of the more substantial of them all.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
And you mentioned the Mellon family. Now, I had someone contact me, and they said that Chris Mellon, I just thought this was a really funny statement. Chris Mellon, how can you trust him? It shows a 12-year gap on his LinkedIn for an occupation. And I wrote him back, and I said, well, he's a Mellon. He can do whatever he wants.
Right.
I lived in Pittsburgh, and yes, the Mellons can do whatever they want.
That's right. That's right.
Yes. Tom DeLonge put together a really high-powered group of individuals to work on this. And, boy, I have to take my hat off to him. He has done an incredible job with this, and I didn't think he was going to be able to pull it off, and it appears that he has.
Yeah,
There's
been a lot of bashing of Tom DeLonge because, you know, people are saying, you know, I think the feeling is that, you know, he hasn't been really involved in the UFO field, and here he comes, you know, because he's famous and popular and has money, and here he comes along. And I think there may be a little bit of jealousy, but also,
yes,
he, you know, some of his own personal views are kind of out there, and I can understand where it makes people a little leery. But boy, he did knock this one out of the park after all said and done.
Yes,
yes. And when I heard him speak about evil aliens early on and on some of the radio shows that he was on, I was very apprehensive about what he had up his sleeve and exactly what he was doing. But considering the individuals on this Academy of Arts and Science, I really, I'm impressed with the group of individuals he has.
Yes. Yes, I've never seen a more high-powered group in their presentations. And I've watched a lot of presentations. And these guys knew what they had to say, and they said it well. And Tom, I was not expecting a lot from Tom, but I thought he did a bang-up job. And so it was a pleasure for me. I didn't have to say, ooh, why did he say that? You know, which is my usual comment with this sort of thing. But yeah. I was very favorably impressed. And, you know, I don't know how much coverage the story got overall on the media. I'm sure some places played it a lot bigger. But I was frankly surprised that it got started with the New York Times. I mean, Leslie has done things there, but still, I saw the comments in one of the articles by the guy from the New York Times, how they went over it, and you know, they had to be convinced to do it, and so mm-hmm. forth and so on. And what he seemed to be saying is, we did our due diligence. And that's nice to know, because there have been times in the past when the New York Times has not.
Well, any media seems to... Their standards seem, well, in a lot of media, their standards of journalism, they could use some refresher courses, I think.
Yes.
So, Stan, one of the things I wanted to ask you, in all your years that you've been looking at this topic, is there any equivalent to what has just happened?
Well, I don't think so, although it's tempted to say, well, there were the congressional hearings of 1968 where 12 scientists presented the story of flying saucers. It didn't get a lot of publicity at the time, but it was impressive overall. If you read those hearings, and they were all, I was the only one without a PhD of the 12 guys who were presenting.
Wow.
That's pretty powerful stuff. Mm-hmm. But it didn't make as big a splash. It was like people are so reluctant. Look, I'll admit, when I gave my first year's worth of lectures way back in the mid-60s, I was wary. I kept waiting for somebody to give me a really hard time or to be able to knock me out of the park, so to speak. And it didn't happen. I was relieved. But there was a whole year there where I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop, so to speak. And here, these guys proceeded on doing their thing, and no shoes dropped. And, you know, I think Dr. Tyson, if anybody looks at what he actually said, he screwed up. He didn't say anything useful. He showed no imagination. And you think, why are you talking science and imagination? But you have to stop to think, why? Why secrecy? Why would aliens come here? It's not a game. We have a long history on this planet of beings from one place, one country, giving a hard time to beings from another country. And so we see that all the time. We have aliens coming here who you expect them to, you know, land on a White House lawn? They have, this is the first time in recent history, as far as we know, that we've been in a real position to say, if we want to go to the stars, we can. And turn that around. What do you think the aliens think about that?
Hmm.
They would be concerned as all get out about us. Our track record is terrible. We keep forgetting that. You know, we're nice guys. Everybody knows that. Well, we're not.
Well, we have no way to tell whether they're nice guys like us either. You know,
they haven't attacked us yet, though.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not saying we know what the future holds, whether they're going to give us another year and say, oh, we've given them enough time, forget about it, wipe it out. We don't know. But you can make a case that if you have a sufficiently advanced civilization, that it knows some history about its own beings in the neighborhood, that they've decided that getting along is better than throwing H-bombs at each other, don't you think?
Right.
At some point, you've got to make that decision. Because if you don't, we are going to be throwing H-bombs, and we're going to be gone. So I'm a rationalist. I think the aliens are going to act sensibly. And I'm particularly intrigued by the times that they have showed up near nuclear weapons testing.
Right.
Near nuclear installations. And it's not because I'm a nuclear physicist, but nuclear energy gives us a means to go out there and bother them. And if I were an alien, I'd be very worried about that. You know, as long as we were stuck on our own planet, I can see where the aliens say, let the kids play their silly games. But as soon as you say they've exploded 2,000 nuclear weapons, which we have, suddenly the whole local neighborhood is within reach. And that's one thing that has really changed since I began work in ufology. Our concept of how many planets there are and how many are in the neighborhood has changed drastically. Mm-hmm. Frank Drake said not too many years ago there might be as many as 8,000 planets out there. Mm-hmm. Now we're talking 8 billion.
It's probably a lot more.
Ball game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's the limit. At least 8 billion in our own little galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is our status, we are guaranteed. I can't believe we're not of concern to others in the galaxy, in our neighborhood, because of our behavior. 2,000 nuclear weapons is putting a lot of stuff out there.
Right, right. So I would like to ask what you thought about Bob Bigelow's side, his part of this whole thing. Also, because you mentioned the senator, and I know there was a connection there. But also, yeah. If either one of you have heard anything about the metals that are the unusual metals that are
well
housed there.
I know Bob Bigelow. I got the first research grant that he made a lot of years ago. I'm pleased about that, and I was very favorably impressed with him. Not because of the $1 billion, that's impressive enough, but I mean because of how he handled things, how he could make decisions, how he was rational and didn't interfere. He went along on our first research trip, and he didn't interfere, and that was a point some of the other people didn't want him to go. But I was very impressed. Now, that was one part that was confusing, because at one point they said something about the composition of the materials, and at the other point they've got materials, but it sounded as if they did know what they were. Knowing what something is doesn't mean you can duplicate it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's easy to say, but that doesn't mean you can, I want 3 pounds of that. Forget it. It's like separating uranium isotopes. Oh, you need U-235. Well, it's only 0.7%. No way to worry about that. Well, we spent an awful lot of money and effort to build facilities to separate that tiny amount, less than 0.7%. And make it 90% enriched, which is one heck of a jaunt from the beginning to end. Very expensive. So what I'm saying is that we are in a situation where we have to recognize how we look to them, and we also have to recognize how we look to each other. We're all Earthlings. Who's going to decide how we proceed from here?
Hmm.
And that is of great concern to me. Where's the forum? Who's going to run the show?
Right. Well, it's kind of like if we were indeed had contact, who would represent the Earth? as well?
Good question.
Yes, absolutely.
I certainly don't. No, I'm not going to get. I'm not going to go there about the president. Yeah. Not good. I get a lot of mail if I say anything about that. We had a question that came in, and it was directed to you, Stan. They wanted to know what you thought about the fundraising part of To the Stars. What your thoughts were about that?
Well, I'm still wanting to know how much money they raised and where they raised it from. Frankly, obviously somebody spent some money on this thing. Mm-hmm. And I have to give them credit for being able to do that. I mean, no matter how you slice it, it takes money to put on a dog and pony show, as some people used to say. You have to do a nice job, which they did the other day. The production on the stage there was very well done, I thought. That took effort. It took money. It took somebody committing themselves to let's get it done right. And so I'm still trying to figure out how much money did they spend. I mean, $22 million, at one point somebody said that was a year, which is not the case. It was all told in the five-year period, I guess. But I'm still very curious. Has anybody heard any stories about where the dough come from? It's not that Bigelow couldn't afford it, but I think there'd be a lot of people worried about having one man having all the irons in the fire. You know what I mean?
Right. But just a little confusion there, Stan. The question the person was asking, that Tom DeLonge had a fund drive when he was starting that. Actually, someone's calling in now. Why don't I take this call? And it may be the person that wanted to ask that question.
Okay.
Caller, you are live. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Is this me?
That's you, yes.
Hey, how you guys doing?
What's your first name?
Steve.
Hi, Steve. You have a question for our guests?
I did. I mean, I had a sighting when I was a kid, so I'm a believer. As the saying goes, I know what I saw. But I can't help being concerned about one thing with all this. As a longtime systems engineer, I mean, this is like the perfect honeypot. And the whole thing with a honeypot is legitimacy. And, you know, we've had so much trouble in the world with the hacking, with the state-sponsored hacking, the election, you know, just before that, North Korea with hacking Sony. And so in systems engineering, there's a notion called creating a honeypot, something that's just too tempting, so that people couldn't resist and couldn't resist cutting loose their own teams to try and get more information. And you would have partners in that who are witting and unwitting, you know, to create that mm-hmm. honeypot. And I you've seen the movie Wag the Dog with Robert De Niro?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Where
I didn't either.
Well, they create a circumstance that lets the president of the United States off the hook for a major crisis. And they do it with one video of a video going down a chimney and of a bomb going down a chimney. And they're selling this idea. They're going to create a war to get the public distracted from what's really going on. And I just and so they fake a war and they have one video. And really what we've seen on CNN is that one video, and it's very compelling. And I just can't help but wonder if this isn't them creating a honeypot, basically.
So, Stan, do you understand his question?
I do, and I don't have an answer for him. I can't say that it's impossible. With all the manipulations that there have been on this planet, you know, over the last, just make it 20 years, no less 200 years. There are all kinds of possibilities. But I was very impressed by the quality of the people who were involved. These are guys who've had very responsible positions and had to be trusted, and they were high security positions. And, you know, maybe it's foolish having had a clearance for 14 years, but I think it's a strong control on people that they're doing things under security. And you sign on to keeping your mouth shut and doing all kinds of other things. You take it very seriously. Somebody who hasn't had a clearance may not realize what a big impact it is on an individual when he finds out about stuff that he can't tell anybody about, and where the penalties for doing that are very severe. It scares you. You got to watch what you're doing. You got to be careful. I was impressed with that stuff.
I just wanted to say, it seems like, you know, we're all so eager for this to be true. And it just, for what we have seen, the video on CNN, we've gotten one video out of them, and I hope there's a lot more coming. And that's
Kathy, what was that number of how many reports?
Well, they had 36 reports. That was part of the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. Three dozen thick reports with hundreds of pages and 36 technical reports. That is according to Luis Elizondo. And no, we don't have all of that. They have only been able to get the information that has been released
to
the Freedom of Information Act. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
So they don't have all of the information. And they are, I guess, very slowly going to release the information that they have. It's my understanding that they have 3 videos. They have shown one, I'm trying to think of what it was called.
The gimbal.
The gimbal, yeah. Yes. And then there was the one from the Nimitz. And so there's another one that should be coming out. That's my understanding of it.
Yeah, and I've heard that Elizondo has up to 12 of them that he was able to secure, but whether he can only show these 3 right now, I'm not sure. Steve, thanks so much for the call. I thought it was Steve. I thought it was Steve. Mm-hmm. Perhaps I got his name wrong and he didn't answer. Anyway, so the line is open if someone would like to call and ask our guests some questions. The number is 603-967-4030. So I think I was understanding the caller was calling the video the honeypot. I think that's what he was saying. And like you said, Kathy, there's more to come on that. And let's talk a little bit about the video, though, right now, because I'm going to pull this up on YouTube so people can see it. So there's people, I don't want to say debunking or trying to debunk or bashing the video. I don't know. Have either one of you heard of anything about that?
Well, I did hear somebody saying something, and my immediate reaction was, hey, wait a minute. They're at 20,000 feet. They made it sound like it was, a whole movie project here on the ground. It wasn't like that at all. This is very special equipment, very special circumstances, and very sophisticated people involved. And we had the live recording, which I found rather fascinating. You don't often get to hear those from this sort of thing. Right. I mean, a Navy pilot flying a very expensive jet and using very sophisticated equipment, to have that out in the open is a big step forward. And I hope that means there's going to be more like that.
Right.
And David, Commander David Favor, had 16 years experience and over 3,500 hours of flying time, specially trained. And, what those men were describing was incredible, that the craft came in at supersonic speed. It stopped at 80,000 feet. It dropped to 20,000. And then it dropped again and stopped 50 feet above the ocean.
Right.
It was moving back and forth like a ping pong ball hitting a wall, and accelerating at incredible speed, in moving in ways that we cannot. They were breaking our aerodynamic rules, our laws of physics as we understand them. This is really something very special.
Yes, very special indeed.
And, you know, a lot of people talk about the G-force. Of course, that if, you know, a being was inside that, there's no way that it could survive as we know it. As we know it.
Wait a minute.
Right, as we understand it.
No, the kicker is, what you need to understand is that there isn't a fixed number. How many G's can you stand? It depends, how many G's you can stand depends on the direction of the force with regard to the body. And notice the astronauts go up on their back, not foot to head.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on the duration of the force and the direction with regard to the body and the magnitude of the force. Now, there's some crazy numbers here. You can actually stand, and there are measurements to show this, you can stand 30 G's for 1 second. 1 second. That's 0 to 600 miles an hour.
Wow.
In 1 second. That's pretty splendid. Pretty shocking. A trained pilot can perform a tracking task at 14 G's for 2.5 minutes. And you think about that for a minute. That doesn't sound like long, but it does to me. What I'm saying is you design systems, and also another aspect here, we haven't talked about plasma propulsion, that is having a plasma around a vehicle, ionized air around a vehicle. But it turns out there's an enormous amount of work, which you don't hear about in the open very much, that shows that with an ionized air region around a craft, and you have controlling magnetic and electric fields, you can control lift, drag, heating, sonic boom production, all of those things.
Yes.
So that's not some other world's technology. Maybe it is, but I mean, that's real world. So one of my rules is that technological progress comes from doing things differently in an unpredictable way. The future is not an extrapolation of the past. You have to change how you do things. So it's too quick to say that we couldn't do it or we can't stand it or it violates the laws of physics. No, we're talking about new technologies. We're always violating the laws of physics. If you say the way we could do things before, it sets the limit. And so you got to be real careful about that. We've got a lot to learn yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not volunteering for that 30G mission.
You know, I would like to say something if I can.
Sure.
Way back in 1961, as Barney Hill stood and looked at that craft, he described it appearing to bounce back and forth. He compared it to a ball on a rubber band that's connected to a paddle, and you hit the ball on the paddle, and it flies out, and then it comes back. It was the same kind of motion way back in 61, and there were non-humans aboard that craft.
Yeah, I know it is like we can't understand, first of all, how they get here. Also, the spectacular things that people have been reporting for, you know, decades of the speeds, the sharp turns, the disappearing and reappearing, all those strange things that people are reporting. We haven't, you know, we don't have a clue of exactly how they're doing.
Well, we do. We do have some clues.
Okay.
We can do a lot of stuff now. And that's why I mentioned nuclear fusion. Look, it's kind of like going from dynamite, TNT. Wow, a big bomb in 1944, 10-ton blockbuster, released the energy of 10 tons of dynamite. Wow. Well, the first A-bomb, the next year, 15,000 tons of dynamite. The first H-bomb, 1952, 10 million tons of dynamite, and the Russians sent one off. Tsar Bomba, I love that name. 57 million tons of dynamite. One stinking bomb.
Right. Could take out Texas, I've heard.
Scared the hell out of me.
Yeah. If that's the one I think you're talking about, they said it's big enough to destroy Texas, basically.
Well, the fireball alone on was 3 miles wide. That's just the fireball. That's not the area of destruction, which is much bigger than that. But remember, the Russians got Siberia, which they got a lot of empty space, so what the heck? But what I'm saying is, look at that progression from 10 tons to 57,000 tons. You know, that's a big, big, big jump.
Right.
But remember, fusion is what drives all the energy in the universe. That's what goes on in the stars. I'm not saying there's not something better that we will eventually find, but the jump between burning gas, you know, and setting off a fusion device, and I worked on fusion propulsion for deep space travel in 1962.
Wow.
So it's not a new idea.
Hmm.
It'll be expensive. Okay, everything is expensive. You know. But what I'm saying is we haven't reached the limits of what we know already, and we've got a lot more to learn. I'm always an optimist. We will learn more. We haven't reached the limit. And the history of technology development has been reaching out and finding new ways of doing things. There was a study, just to give an example, in the 40s, Professor Campbell figured out what the weight would be of a rocket able to get a man to the moon and back. A million tons, he said. And sorry, you know, the trouble is the Saturn V weighed 3,000 tons.
Mm.
He was a little wrong. He didn't know his technology.
I see where you're going.
Also,
yeah.
It only takes a year at 1G to get to the speed of light. And I've tried this little experiment. Ask my audiences, how many think it would take 1,000 years, 100 years, 10 years, 1 year at 1G to get to the speed of light? And I've had many of these were professional people who thought it took 1,000 years at 1G to get to the speed of light. It's less than 1 year. That's the real world. I mean, sorry if that shocks people, if it bothers people, but that's the way it is.
Stan, we have another caller just called in. Caller, your first name and where are you calling from?
Andrew from Stratford, Connecticut.
Hi, Andrew. Welcome to the show. And do you have a question for our guests?
Thank you. I do. Stanton's thoughts on the state of affairs with science today and the scientific community, how people like Tyson and Shostak and others seem to really send out the perception to the public that, you know, like a lot of scientists in the past who say foolish things moments before some amazing discovery is made, they always have a condescending or, you know, kind of a know-it-all attitude.
Yes.
But really, there's just a tremendous amount of information and knowledge we do not have yet. Gravity, light, photons, particle duality, I mean, all these things. And they'd have you think that right now we're always at the, you know, the ultimate, at the mountain peak of human knowledge.
Since Roman time.
We're certainly not. The progress, as I said, comes from doing things differently in an unpredictable way. And you don't have to look very far to see it. And the history was, Kathy and I did a book, Science Was Wrong, 14 chapters. We each did 7, I think. And each one stimulated by some very smart person saying something very stupid. A man would never fly in a vehicle that was closed, maybe in a balloon. That was 2 months before the Wright brothers' first flight.
Right, right.
Another one said that space travel is utter bilge. Great astronomer said that. What good would it do? Nobody can do it. You know, and the next year, Sputnik went up. That's the thing, that if we look in all directions, we don't fly, you know, we don't set speed records now with propeller-driven airplanes. We got jets and we got rockets. Progress comes from doing things differently. And It costs money. Okay, that's the way things go. It costs money.
Right. So just one final thought, and then I'll take your answer off the air, would be that maybe the next task ahead for the UFO community might be to change the public's perception and try to remove the stigma, because, you know, you'd think that the scientific community would be stumbling over themselves to get to this information to figure out electromagnetic propulsion or whatever it is they're using, but people, due to the stigma, won't touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Well, remember that the stigma, look, as I said, I've been out there. I've said very strong things, and I haven't felt the stigma. And so that was one thing that I noticed in the show the other night, that they were worried about the stigma, afraid to take that final step and use the word alien, you know, extraterrestrial. No, we can't say that. Well, I've been out there. After the first 700 lectures, and I come on very strong, you know, people are quite willing and able to accept that. I got asked in front of a full house at the University of Manitoba in Winnipeg. It's about 600 people crowded with people even sitting in the aisles. How about asking this audience, I was asked, this is at the end of my lecture, where they stand on the subject. I had presented some Gallup poll data and some other polls of engineers and scientists and so forth. And I hesitated. I said, well, look, I usually stick my neck out. I don't ask the audience to stick their neck out. Well, I don't think anybody will mind, so they asked the question. Better than 90% said they thought some UFOs are alien spacecraft.
Yeah.
Not 10%, 90%.
Right.
So I try to encourage people, speak up, but have your facts in hand before putting your mouth in gear, that's all.
Right. Great.
And
all right, well, thank you, and I'll let you guys go. And, Martin, you do a great show. Keep up the good work.
Hey, thank you. And, Andrew, I appreciate those great questions. Thanks a lot.
Sure. Okay.
All right. So that's it, everybody, for the free part of the show. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to be back next week with Dr. John Alexander. Should be another great show. I'm pretty excited about that. You can support the show to listen to full shows. And in part two, we take more calls of this particular show and also talk about the Betty and Barney Hill incident, some behind-the-scenes family dynamics that are pretty interesting. So to support the show for $2 or more a month, just go to podcastufo.com, and that information is on the menu bar. Happy New Year, everyone, and remember to keep your eyes to the sky.